Hello world, this is Calvin Pascal, your host, and you are tuned into another episode of the Hinted Drum Podcast. On this episode of the podcast, I talked with Kofo. Kofo is a writer, a storyteller, maybe a filmmaker, and we talked about stories, we talked about the creativity processes, we talked about writing, we talked about the life cycle of stories, and we talked about, you know, a lot of things in general that I think that both of us found interesting, and I hope you do too. I've been away from the podcast for some time, but I'm trying to come back. I have had like so much stuff going on, new things keep coming up, so I've not had time to mostly sit down, have conversations and record them, but I hope to start pushing out more episodes for you all. And yeah, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, don't forget to reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram at Hinted Neuron. And here's my conversation with Kofo. Hi, I'm here with Kofo. Kofo, nice to meet you. Very excited that you agreed to do the podcast, and you know, I've known you for like 2 years now. I first noticed your Instagram profile, I think around the pandemic, middle of 2020, or maybe the end of 2020. I just did a podcast with Ene Ijiatu. You know her, you follow her on Instagram. we had this really nice conversation. So I kind of just like saw your profile somewhere, maybe on a comment on a post or something. So that's how I actually discovered your profile. And then since then, I was just hooked. And, you know, I was just hooked and I was like, man, I need to actually have this person on my ship, because I actually wanted to have a conversation with you at some point. But, you know, glad to actually be doing it now.
Yeah, I'm flattered.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very nice to meet you too.
Yeah, would you like to introduce yourself for, you know, a few seconds to my audience?
Okay. My name is Kofo Rola Odozi. I'm a writer. I'm a student trying to not die, trying to not die under the stress of life. And yeah, I don't want to say, I'm not a filmmaker. I make videos. I don't say I'm a filmmaker, but I don't know. I feel like that comes with a lot of responsibilities and a lot of, I don't think I have that. So I'm just going to say I'm a writer and I make videos sometimes. So yeah, and also a student.
Yeah, to be honest, I feel you. I feel like you push out so much content and, you know, like the stories you're telling, like true writing, long form, and even short form writing, and like the pictures and the videos I see there. That's the amazing stuff you do, even as.
Thank you.
I mean, I know what it means to be in maybe an Nigerian university that I could cut through sometimes. Like, it kind of leaves no time for you as a person.
Doesn't
I mean, that's
do.
Amazing stuff. Yeah. So I, like we were discussing earlier before I started to record, I read some of your poetry and some blog posts that you posted in the past, and there was
in the past,
I don't
Jesus
know how
Christ.
To like describe. What do you say? You
went to the past.
Yeah, I actually like to read everything, because, you know, it's nice to always know the early days of someone writing, because you need to see how they evolve. I think it tells a full story of the person.
Like, sure.
I think that, yes, I would not only explore the new things that you put out, but like, I want to see how this person was maybe thinking a few years back or something like that. So, if I wanted to define Kofo, maybe someone asked me, I'll tell someone that she's a storyteller. because I...
Yes, that's
perfectly fine. Yes, so, like, before the story, how Stell goes, and I think in some way, maybe that's where we have, like, really good common interest that I would not say I'm a storyteller, but I want to tell stories. Like, I just have this deep passion for stories, and I feel like I want to tell them. It could be any kind of story. And, you know, recently I started to think about, like, you know, the life cycle of stories, my own stories or people's stories, the ones I've heard, and, like, the ones I want to narrate. And, you know, in some way, you try to write them, it becomes really flat in, like, oh, this giant idea of maybe a story I had in my mind, and or the experience I had, or something I saw, or something that someone told me. I try to narrate it. I just find it so unbelievable that when I try to write it, that I have flattened that story.
Yeah, it turns towards, and then it just becomes so simple. Like, it's not this simple in my head, right? Why can't I just glamorize the way it is in my head? Like, why can't the output be the same?
This thing that bothers me, because, like, I think I'm obsessed with sentences, and I you could also call this a rant, so let me finish. So I think I'm obsessed with sentences in a way that maybe I'm trying to draft a sentence. I'm like, I fight
that's
with one
sentence.
That's
an interesting obsession.
Yes. And I fight with one sentence for maybe a few minutes, trying to, like, carve it to something that makes sense. Not make sense, but make it look well-defined. Make it look robust in some type of way. And, I don't know if maybe other people struggle with this too. So that's why I wanted to talk about it with you. And, you know, you put out more content than most people I know. So I just wanted to talk about your own relation with stories and maybe writing.
This funny thing is that recently, did you see the last story I put up? There's no space in the future. There's no space in the future. The last story I put up on Medium.
Yeah. I think I read like first few sentences of it.
Okay. I sent that story to a friend, and then he was like, "Your writing is so chaotic." And I was like, "Well, what do you fucking mean by that? I am about to take offense. Please quickly explain yourself." And then he was like, "That it's just like, that's if my writing is a reflection of my mind. Like, like on the outside, I look at a person that's put together, someone that is just gently going around, just quiet and simple. But they're like, inside of me is like pandemonium, like it's like a madhouse, and like that's if my stories are a reflection of that. And I mean, like, he's not wrong, he's actually not wrong, but my thought process can be very, very chaotic sometimes, most times. And like, the only way that I get to release those thoughts is through writing. Because, like, one thing, I don't know why, I don't know if it's just me, but then, like, people usually ask, what's your inspiration behind that? And I don't always have inspiration. Like, asking me what made you write this, there's no mind-blowing experience that can tell you, oh, this struck. It's just, I'm just dealing with stuff right now. Like, everything you see me put out is, it's probably some deep, dark thought that is killing me, and I'm just trying to get it out of my system. So I'm not going to say something mind-blowing like, I was walking down the street and something. No. I am literally going through stuff. So, like, that's literally the backbone of my work. So, like, it's an expression of myself. Most of my writing, like, 75, maybe even 80% of my writing is an expression of whatever I'm going through at that point.
It's interesting that you say that, because it's something I battled with for a long time. Like, people will think that you have inspiration. Like, I don't necessarily have anything to write most times. But, like, sometimes I just go somewhere. I mean, I could just go and eat somewhere and, you know, sit down. Boom, I see something and, you know, I just like, okay, maybe I've been thinking about this for a while now. And then I start writing in the restaurant while I just leave my food. Sometimes it's just like, you know, things that you've seen that just maybe you want to, you know, or you've been thinking about. Sometimes you've been thinking about something for so long, but you see something new and for then it just makes you, So,
I think makes your mind start to run and then like.
Yes, exactly. And then at that time, you have to actually try to like push it out, because I think that if I don't put out the writing as fast as I, you know, experience that thought, I might actually just forget to write it, because I've noticed something that is something that I was thinking about. There's this like grand thoughts in my head that I usually forget. I'm like, wow, so that piece is lost forever. And I might never regain.
Jeez, that thing messes with my mind so much. I'm like, I'm here conjuring the story I believe will win me Nobel Prize and everything in this world. And then I'm like, okay, now I'll write it down. And I get to, when I get back, it's like, let me not just do anything. Let me just preserve this idea in my head. I'll write it down eventually. Yeah. And then it's there for me to write down the little pieces and fragments of this story. And I cannot remember it. And I'm just like, God. So this thing's gone forever. Like this. What?
Yes.
Where do
we
go from here?
Right. I talked about it with my friend earlier. I think earlier this year. He writes poetry, and he also led to something I wrote on a blog about the cause of forgetting and and how maybe like what the best way was to protect short-lived thoughts. Because I think that at the time I was really mad at myself for, you know, forgetting a lot of things that I think that would actually be good writing and good stories, or, you know, just interesting thoughts that style there. And is this idea that I've been thinking about, that how much of human humor, how much of human wit, how much of human knowledge is there just lost and forgotten by people because they didn't write it down? I don't know if you've thought about it before, like if you see
I guess
maybe the best storytellers are maybe like the best writers. If you forget about the work they put out and just think about the works that they never wrote or the things that you would never see from them, I don't know if you've thought about it before.
Yeah. So many things lost in translation.
Yeah. So that was a nice tangent. So I wanted to get back to the initial thought I had in mind for the podcast. So,
I
was saying earlier, I've become obsessed with this idea of like the life cycle of stories lately and like the way stories travel. The way stories travel for, like, from the initial point of having an experience to narration to, sorry, from having an experience to what we actually remember and to how we tell them and to how people hear what we tell them and to how those people narrate what we tell them. I don't know. It's like, this is how stories travel. And there's this discussion I was having with a friend, I think last week, about stories and the authenticity that travels, you know, with stories. Like, some people hear certain things, like there are stories we've heard in our lifetime that are just like plain wrong. And then you begin to imagine how a lot of people actually believe these things and like they survive for a very long time. There's so many of these stories, like India, Nigeria. I don't know, you might know some of them as well, but like, I think one very good example in my head is a football match that India and Nigeria had one time in the past that the football
that the ball transforms to a lion.
Yes. So
I heard that story.
Yes, I've become obsessed with how like stories travel, you know, whether it's real or a false one, like how people make up things, how they travel, and how stories are maybe like a deadhead in narration, how stories are trimmed down, how stories are flattened, or how stories could become even more robust in translation or something or narration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I had the idea, and I was like, Kofo would be a nice person to talk about
something
this
that contributes.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't know what you think about that, or if you've maybe thought about it before in like the human.
I definitely have, because like one thing that I know is that history, they say that history never forgets, but like history, we may not forget, but like, it will rewrite the story to suit whoever is telling it. You get to like, as much as we believe this, whatever is happening now, an instance, an experience is being marked in the walls of the universe or something, there's going to be someone somewhere who's going to retell that experience or that occurrence. And then, because they were not there when it happened, or for the, maybe for their own selfish gain, some parts of that story are going to be tweaked a bit. And then, and that person is going to pick up that same story and want to retell it at another place. And it's going to be tweaked a bit. And then the cycle just continues. I think it boils down to the fact that like human beings are like selfish. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why stories change over time. We have little regard for our fellow selves, dead or alive. So like, if I'm going to retell the story, I will try to make myself or whoever I support in the story look like a good person.
Yeah. So I, as you were speaking, I just remembered something now for like a thought that I had.
Okay.
I think that people like to, you know, edit stories to make it sound maybe more interesting or maybe more captivating than maybe the actual thing that happened, because they want to sound intelligent. Because I think that stories make you seem intelligent. Like if you tell a good story, people will think you're smart.
Like this, I just watched a movie this weekend, Sausage Party. I think that's the movie. Have you seen it?
No, I've not seen it.
Okay, so the main character, what the movie is about, it's about foodstuffs that like they can talk, foodstuff in the store, they can talk and they can interact with themselves. So they believe that since those foodstuffs, they have never left the store, they believe that what outside the store is a good world for them. They don't know that outside of the store, they get chopped, they get killed, they get eaten. They don't know that's what happened outside the store. And then we come to find out that like that belief that they have was made up by somebody there. And the person there made it up so that the foodstuff can have an enjoyable life. The person did not want the foodstuff to live their life in constant agony, waiting for the day they are unfortunately picked by human beings and then chopped and eaten or something. The person wanted them to, while they were in the store, to enjoy themselves. So I guess that's one of the ways where stories are retold, just for like small moments of joy or happiness.
Yeah, that is interesting that you say that, because that sounds like a that sounds like an allegory for something that we are all familiar with in our own human lives. If you talk about maybe, I don't like talking about religion on my podcast, but it sounds like an allegory for something that we are very much familiar with. But Yeah. If you think about it, we want to be comforted. And so, yeah, I don't know. But I think certain people want to be comforted. So, like, they cling on to the stories of an eternal life, that there's, like, a better life here. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a better life somewhere else that is different from here. And that if you know, do the right thing in a certain way, in a well-defined way, and very strict way, you might be able to go to that better place. I don't know the validity of that. That's not my place, but like everything else, and I know what a story looks like, and it sounds like a good story that could comfort. I think that we tell stories to comfort ourselves and to comfort people. And
we cling to
stories because we feel like the author of maybe a story is someone that sees us, that we are not alone in maybe like whatever thing maybe we are going through or anything, and that or someone else is going through this, and they even have words to describe it in ways that I have not described it myself. And I think that's why people cling to stories. I don't know if that's true or necessary. I really think about that.
I think so too. I agree with that school of thought.
See, I was talking with someone like a few weeks back, and they said that they read a lot of books, but they don't keep those books in their house. That the book that they keep in their room is, I don't know if you had Perry Jackson, if you know, is it Percy Jackson? Yeah, Percy Jackson, the Olympian.
Percy stuff. Jackson, so, yeah.
Yes, so they keep those volumes of book beside them just because anytime they break down, that's the thing that will comfort them. So at the time, I didn't know how to interpret that. They said those were familiar words that could comfort them whenever, you know, they had a mental breakdown or something. So I was, you know, thinking about that.
What comforts you when you have a mental breakdown?
I do not have a little mental breakdown, to be honest. And let's see.
Wow.
It's a very difficult question to answer because
okay.
I think that for maybe human beings are different, but I would.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm telling myself a lie, but, you know, I mean, some people say I have higher risk, but I would just say that I write when, you know, I feel like.
Okay.
I think I had one last year. Last year, November. No, last year, October. So I was really writing.
That's nice. So I envy you.
And sorry, this mental breakdown was caused by a person. So I had to actually write like.
Okay.
I was writing letters in my notes to, you know, the person. Mm-hmm. It was like trying to talk to the person, but in my own notepad or something like that. So I think that was one way I was able to cope. But it's interesting that you say that. Is it that maybe I would like to define myself as a self-aware person? I mean, that could be a lie, but like if I can't like point out the time this year I had a mental breakdown. It's interesting, but what comforts you when you have a mental breakdown?
That's, I'm just going to say food.
Oh.
I thought of chicken.
Oh, yeah.
and I write a lot.
Do you write like every day?
Every day, no. not every day, but like a day would come and I would probably write like 6 different pieces that day.
And I'll, wow.
And then my mind would just set off for like next 2 weeks. And I just said stop functioning.
That's
and
amazing.
Would come, I just have like an outburst of like emotions or something.
So are you the type of person to write once and like not edit? Oh
no, some things sit in my drafts for like a really long time because I feel like something's just wrong. I will just keep looking over it and keep picking at something. And then sometimes I write some things and I'm like, nope, not going over this again. You are either getting deleted or posted, so pick a struggle.
Wait, do you delete what you write?
Yeah, sometimes.
Wow, that's interesting. I've never heard someone say like to delete because I.
Oh no! Sometimes I write some things.
Yeah.
I write some things and I'm like, how the fuck did this come out of my head? Like, do you? I ask myself, okay, do you need help? I'm like, nope. Nope. I don't let this see the light of day.
I very much think that because I think I do write some things that I would never actually see the light of day, but would I delete them? I'm not sure if I would want to delete. Because I think it's always interesting to look back, maybe you know, in a few years and see, oh, this was what my mind was generating at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could make for an interesting story.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't write every day.
I think
my life is very sectioned. Very, very sectioned because I don't know how to describe myself, but I'm more of a science tech person. I've been, you know, doing maybe like software stuff for some time. So that's like the part of me that is like front facing to some people. Software guy, science guy. Now I started my PhD recently and I've been doing all that. So I become very engulfed in all those technical stuff. But like at the end of the day, when I come back, I like to want to convince myself that I'm a storyteller and at the end of the day, this is what I want to do. I want to write and read. If I have the opportunity to do it every day, I just want to, be paid to write and read. So I have like thoughts in my head for like some time and I start collecting sentences. I call myself a sentence collector. I don't know if you said that earlier. I collect sentences. I just like start writing. One or two sentences.
Okay.
Maybe in a day, I would write maybe like 2 or 3 sentences. Or maybe 1 sentence.
Oh, that's nice.
And then I just start keeping everything in a log pile of, you know, one long note.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start to combine them when I feel like it's time to start combining them. So when you call
your life seems very arranged.
No. So when people call me a writer, I tell them I'm not a writer. I'm just a note taker. I take notes.
I
think that's very far removed from who a writer is. Because I think writers write. You know, they sit down like I'm going to write this, but I take notes. And then somehow I merge them together. I don't know if that's like the peculiar writing, and maybe like I don't know if that's like the formal writing process, but that's the kind of writing process I think works for me.
That's a really nice writing process. I think I will try it out like soon. Sounds so, I don't know. Just sound so concise, like, okay, I've written this sentence today. Who knows what I come up with tomorrow? And like, and sentences are like, you know, just joining them together.
I do have. So, I mean, it's not everything that usually gets finished. And lately, I've become obsessed with the idea of when something is done. Like, how do you know something is done? Maybe our question is good for you since you have to put out stuff regularly. I think for your audience, I do not, personally, I don't have a need to put out content most times because I'm like once in a month kind of person. But for you who put out content regularly, when do you know something is done and ready to be shared?
When, there's nothing for me to take out from it anymore. I've been looking at this thing and I may want to continue to write, but when I look at it, there's nothing else for me to remove from it. It's just right. It just feels right. I don't know how else to explain it, but there's nothing else to take out from me. Because if I say I want to keep writing, I'll just keep going on and on and on. But it feels done and there's nothing else to remove from it.
Yeah. And I think maybe that idea is maybe important for someone like me who, would I say, I have a very high standard of what perfection could be like. Because I spoil myself by reading so much good writing. You read so much good stuff and then you feel like you could be like that too. And I mean, I aspire to be like that kind of person to tell stories that... I saw something recently by Jidenna. I don't know if you know Jidenna. You should know him.
I don't follow him. Social.
Yeah. I actually don't follow him as well. He said something like he goes to a museum or a gallery and he sees this very abstract painting, or he sees this painting that looks like someone just put a frame on a wall and that was all, and people are calling it deep. And then you see that visual artists kind of have this knowledge of knowing when something is done. They just do something, spray paint on something and they put it out there. But I think that's something that we could, learn from them as well, maybe as someone who writes. But I don't know, because pictures are much more vivid than words, and there's much more labor you have to do to actually paint a good picture for someone to relate to. But I don't know. I've been talking for like a minute now. Well, yeah. Do you, as the writer, do you feel doubts in yourself sometimes that you have to maybe have a few group of people who read your work before you put it out?
Yes, I do have people I send them to. I anxiously wait for their feedback. I feel I'm biting my nail and I'm literally sitting at the edge of my chair, waiting for them to text me back, say, "Oh, this is good, this is bad, I noticed this, something, something." I'm just anxiously waiting. So yes, I do feel a lot of doubts, all the time.
Does that doubt stem from, this is not good, or maybe it could be something, am I the one who's supposed to tell this story, or I'm not qualified to, say this. I don't know how that doubt expresses itself for you.
I've never thought, I'm not qualified to tell the story because this is my story. If I'm not qualified, then. But what I felt is, this is definitely not good enough. I definitely had that thought constantly and over, this story that I'm trying to tell, I've told it, but I just feel like I haven't used words the way they should be used. I haven't properly showed the audience the picture I'm trying to paint. I feel like I've created a caricature of what I'm actually trying to say. And I'm like, I've gathered a room full of people and then plastered their eyes open and then like forced them to look at the caricature of what I made. Do you get?
Yeah. Caricature. Somehow, when you were saying that, my mind was thinking about this idea that people touch on a lot about authenticity. I don't know if it's something you think about or like you, but I know people say it a lot in any kind of circle about authenticity, about creating authentic work. But I don't know. Do you think that anything is authentic?
What? I don't know. It's overrated, honestly, in my own, from what I think, I feel like authenticity is overrated. Like, who is determining it? What are the factors? What's the metric? How do you measure it? You get, like, on what scale do you measure authenticity? Like, who marks the book? Who gives the score? Who checks it? Who determines these things?
Yeah. We're all just plagiarizing things we see and we observe, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just a concept made up to like box people. It.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, I think what's important is that we're being honest when we write.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
as long as you're being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
As long as you're being honest with yourself as you're writing. Like, that's fine. That's honestly what I matter.
Yeah. We're getting to the later part of the podcast. I usually ask two questions and everybody has to answer them if they appear on my podcast. So one of them is if you're given
if you're given
a microphone and, you know, anybody, every single person in the world can hear what you have to say, what would you tell them?
Every single person in the world.
Yeah.
Will what I say change their mind or like I just have to say what I want to say?
It doesn't matter. You have one shot to say something. What would you say?
I'm not going to change their mind.
It could, but at the end of the day, you can't determine that. But you have one shot to say something to everybody.
Okay. I have one shot to say something. Mm. Mm. Oh, let's see. When you first asked me that question, I had something I wanted to say. But like, now that I know that like they are just going to follow, their person is just going to follow their ears.
I mean, you could say the initial thing you said. You had in mind.
Okay. I was going to say like, love is love, and like, you should not be hypocrites. And like, you can't. Everyone's moral compass is not the same, so don't go around expecting us all to be the same. People are different, so you can't be shitting on people for being different.
Yeah. That's very important. I think that people need to recognize that we are not the same in certain ways we think, we act, or we are born, or certain things. And like we should praise that difference more. And not judge people or kill people because they're different from us or don't believe the same thing as us.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thank you. I'm going to ask you if you heard about what's happening in Iran. Well, I just remember that one, your podcast, not the court. So, no.
Yeah, I do. It's not something I follow every day, but I kind of read news once in a while and I see what's happening.
Okay.
And part to the women in Iran,
it's fucked up.
I think they're sitting. I think for them, they are setting like good stories. And, you know, in a few years, we'll read about their stories, like we'll read about the women's movement.
Yeah.
So that's a new women's movement that we would read about in a few years' time.
Yeah.
And I hope someone writes that.
Seems sad now, but like, I believe somebody will.
Yeah, I think the whole process of change is sad, because if you think about it,
change
doesn't really come
both sideways.
Yeah, it doesn't really come in a happy, smiley way. I think it's more struggle. And then, you know, when you've achieved that in maybe a few years later, or the people who live to like enjoy the benefit of this. Of those things, they might not really know it was not sweet.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the biggest benefits of like things being written down.
Yeah. Exactly. My second question for you, Kofo, is what is the meaning of life?
Oh my god. What are all these questions you're asking me?
They're just two questions.
What's the meaning of life? Life. Life is... Life... I don't know if I should say it's a straight line. No. Life is like a triangle. Yeah. Every time you think you are at your stop, the final point, there's more. Jigget.
It sounds like, well, there's always some bullshit ahead.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it may not always be bullshit though. It may be good stuff too, but like, just know. Something is coming. Like,
exactly.
Just that, that's not it. Like, whenever you're at a point and you feel like, this is it too. Whether you're at a good point or a bad point and you're thinking this is it too. That's not it too. Something is coming. And you should be prepared.
I resonate with that a lot because, you know, but especially in my life, when, you know, things are just like really great. Mm-hmm. Things are just smooth. Everything's happening according to plan. I mean, things rarely ever happen according to plan. But you have two strikes and like things just go perfectly. You begin to wonder, wow, what's next? Where is the next dip? What's the next dip I'm going to experience? But then I like to be optimistic. I think that in general, I keep a very optimistic stance on life. I don't know, but that's foolishness, because sometimes optimistic could be foolishness, but I still like to try and be a happy person. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe, I guess. I would classify myself as someone as happy just because I want to do stuff, I guess. But happiness wouldn't let you create so much. I think I create so much stuff when I'm not
you're in sad
place. I know that's like a very familiar trope.
I really like happiness. I like joy. I like good times.
And that's most of my life. So which is why maybe I would not like write like people who have very deep pain, I guess. But then I tried to write what's true to me, was like true to me. And, you know, I don't make up stuff just to sound, you know, insightful or deep. I try to. The things that people would feel joy reading and can resonate with. Yeah. And I think we should all strive for that. We shouldn't try to sound too deep sometimes. As people who want to write, I guess. I'm calling myself someone who wants to write because I don't see myself as a writer yet.
I don't believe you.
Yes, so for it was really nice talking with you. I think that we covered some things I wanted to talk about, and sometimes I feel like podcast is like therapy with someone.
Absolutely.
It was nice talking with you. So I don't know if you want to say anything for my audience.
Nothing.
Where they could find you. I mean, I was to put your links.
I'm on Instagram at Kofo is Art. Then Twitter had the same name. That's my name everywhere, Sha. Kofo is Art. Everywhere. Apart from Medium, Sha. Medium is like my full name.
Okay.
Kofo roll out with those.
Alright. I'm going to follow you on Twitter after I call, just so that I have you on Twitter as well. It was nice having you on podcast again, and
I really enjoyed myself. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the end. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, do all that. And if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, don't forget to reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram at HintedNeuron. So that's it for me this week. And until then, stay curious.